Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap, March 25th, 2015. Chris, how's it going?
I'm doing well, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm doing well as well.
Very good, then. We've established each other's well-being.
Yes.
We can amicably end this banter now.
Yes. Let us stop.
Very good. I don't know what to do now. Normally things get so off topic.
Just, like, 5 minutes of silence in there.
Normally things get so random and off topic where it's eventually like, weren't we supposed to talk about manga?
I don't know. We've lost all momentum.
Talked about Hulk masturbating for 5 minutes, and I don't know how to lead this into the Usagi drop now.
We don't think about this. We just go.
I guess on the topic of much to do about nothing, giant cockroaches, Nick. How about that?
Yeah. It's kind of weird because, like, I was just burping myself and it was like, oh, right. We actually have a series to go through this time. It's been a while since we actually did that.
Uh-huh.
Terraformars, which is a weird thing to say. And I think that after managing that correct one, it's just going to be Terraformers from now on because, I mean, come on. They're actually called Terraformers in the series. It's on Mars. Okay, so the premise of the series is that Earth is becoming overpopulated. So UNASA, which is basically like, you know, United Nations, NASA, has decided, oh, let's get Mars ready to colonize. So they send this algae to Mars, and they're like, okay, and this will, you know, create an atmosphere and stuff like that. But we need something to process the algae, too. Roaches are super durable creatures and so on and so forth. So they will take care of this problem. So it's like, all right, let's sit on this for about, 500 years? And then it's like, okay, time to see how that's going. Go do it, astronauts who are actually mercenaries. And they're like, okay, we're here. Actually, you guys are the second squad that we sent. The first squad was actually astronauts. And they discovered that there are these giant, muscular, humanoid cockroaches that kill everything. And so you need to kill them.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to inject you with DNA from bugs, so that if you inject yourself with a special drug, you become a bug-human hybrid, and you can fight the Terraformer, which is the cockroach human.
Like, oh, I was wondering why you gave that to us. We thought we were just there to see how the roaches were doing. We thought it was kind of strange you were injecting me with fucking grasshopper genes, but now it makes more sense.
Now go get us a high body count. I mean, help us colonize Mars.
Yeah.
So this series, especially early on, got a very big Gantz vibe off of it. Humans sent to bizarre place, things that are technically aliens, killing them, and lots of dead characters. And lots of fighting. And really the whole point of the series is just, let's have these things fight with each other. That was the vibe I got of it. I did get very different conclusions from the two series by the end of it, because I fucking hate Gantz, and I think it's pointless bullshit. But, this was more like, the writer for this series basically, must have like a constant stream of different things going in. Like, you must, like, constantly flip between National Geographic, ESPN, UFC, pro wrestling, and Animal Planet, and all that stuff, and just then takes a whole bunch of drugs and writes this series, basically.
That is an eclectic mix of inputs to be getting. And you think with all those inputs, something of tangible worth would come out of it. But no, Nick. That is where Terraformars get you. There is nothing to be gained from this. There is only death. The cold, sensationless murder that man has when they step on a cockroach is the same thing that the cockroaches then do to the humans and that I did to this series after 3 volumes. Where I very finishedly put it down and was like, this is horrible. I am never reading this again.
You got not nearly as far into this.
No, I will readily admit I did not get very far into this series, and I will explain in glorious detail why. But
okay.
You want me to start right now? I didn't know if you had
more. Did you have something else you wanted to say before you went into
No, you can go ahead. I want you to go into it. You seem to have a better impression, so let's go into that first.
Well, we started off, honestly, I was, like, really wondering what the fuck they were going to do with this, because the first volume, basically, is not actually technically the first volume of, like, the ongoing story. It's more like a prologue, a prequel, almost. Because it's just this squad of about 15 people, and so very, very quickly, two of them die. Like, the main character's love interest gets her neck snapped by one of the cockroach terraformers, and he goes on a rampage and reveals that he has the, you know, Asian hornet, and so he can, you know, grow stingers from his wrists, and he punches the shit out of the thing, and he kills it, and he uses his poison stingers to stab a whole bunch of them to death. And then there's another guy who is like, you know, I am a soldier from Israel, and I have the power to fire napalm from my hands, basically, and I'm a total badass. Terraformer comes crashing through the wall with his head on his hands.
It is ridiculous. It's like 7 pages, like, with this guy with a very distinct design. Like, it's almost like he's complete, like, everyone's in this, like, power armor.
Like, he looks like Vincent from Final Fantasy.
Like, yeah, it's so elaborate. He's got, like, face tattoos, and, like, he's the introduction to the whole power format of this series, too. Like, they're just like, he's the one man of this crew that if anyone can single-handedly take down this mission, it's him. He's been through more wars than all of us. Yeah, it's just like his fucking half of his skull comes flying through the window, and it's just like, oh, okay then. Thanks for that.
So, very, very quickly after that point, though, they just start dropping, like, well, flies. And it's like, wait a minute, there's only 15 of them. How are they going to continue the series if they keep on dying? They can't just, you know, teleport in a whole bunch of new people like they did with Gantz. Because that was the thing with Gantz. They were like, death is cheap. We keep on producing new characters just so that they can die. Even the main characters can die because they have the, you know, earn 100 points, bring people back thing. So death means nothing. It doesn't matter if they die. And even the people who do die is just like, oh, I knew that guy for like 3 chapters. Who cares? And then this thing starts off with, well, the entire crew is basically dead. And then it's like, actually, two of them are taking off in the escape pod and are going back to Earth. It's like, oh, that was a prologue.
Yeah, that is...
Okay.
It's so strange. It's Terraformers Volume 1, but it should be like Terraformers, like, Volume 0.
Yeah.
Shit really kind of gets going later, but it has this weird kind of start. It makes sense, because following
that...
In the
end, it actually works quite well. Because it establishes the threat of the Terraformers. It establishes the weapon that the humans have in order to fight against them. And it, you know, is like, okay, you know, we'll make a much bigger crew. And, you know, it will be a much more concerted effort with a much more, you know, certain objective and stakes. And that will be the main series. And it's like, okay, now we're sending 100 people. So, plenty of characters to run through, but also plenty of characters that you can actually build up. And
presumably,
well, yeah,
you thought 26 would have been enough before, but
so it was very strange at first, but it's like, oh, okay, this is how they get more people. But also it gives the benefit, because, you know, two of those people survive, then you've got, okay, well, there's this guy who's leading the new expedition. He is now, like, basically the main leader of the newer expedition, and he's got experience fighting these guys, and you understand a lot of his, you know, reasons for doing stuff, where his character basis comes from, because you saw how the first mission affected him. And then it's like, oh, the Prime Minister of Japan also was one of the guys who went on that mission, so you understand some of the stuff that's happening back on Earth from his perspective. But the problem is that there are many different, you know, plot elements going on in this series that boil down to fighting these villains who cannot talk and seem to have no real character of their own. So the only way that you get any actual, like, interesting villains is when political struggles occur. Because even though literally a virus from Mars threatens to destroy all life on Earth and human cockroaches that have an instinctive evolutionary-based desire to destroy humanity are out there, and we have to do everything we can to stop them. No, gotta do stuff so my country will be good and have an advantage over your country, because fuck you! I'm gonna steal stuff and sabotage the mission. And it's the most interesting. It's the only different thing that's going on is countries dicking each other over. And even then, it's just like, I don't care. It's stupid that you're having these political struggles. I don't like it. Stop being idiots. Kill the roaches and then dick each other over. Come on, guys.
This shouldn't be that hard.
But no, you gotta do that. And it's the only way that they actually have, like, villains with personalities ever. And other than that, you know, here is basically how the series goes. There are, you know, some breaks in this, but for the most part, here is how it goes. Alright, the roach is going to kill this guy, but it turns out he has a special power that comes from this animal. It starts off just as being insects, but they manage to, like, evolve the process so that it can be any animal! And so it's like, and so he has this animal, which gives him this strength. And of course, he has this amazing power, so he will be able to fight the roach. The roach punches him in exactly the way that negates everything that was said about that animal. But he has this other power that allows him to do this, and he starts getting the advantage on the roach. And so he is the most superior in this certain capacity. The roach somehow manages to get advantage back. Ah, but he has this one last thing, because humans have the power and will to push on beyond it and beat the roach. Or sometimes overwhelmed by the roach and killed. And that's it. That's like every fight. And then it'll cut to, what is this all about? Cut to people on Earth talking what it's about. Why is there a certain...
I can't even begin to tell you how boring every time they cut away to Earth is. Like, it's just
so stupid. It's like,
I didn't even grasp...
It starts off two guys in a bar just like talking about the mission.
Like as it's going on, they're just like, oh, and did you hear Lieutenant Davis's daughter is up there, too, like, juxtaposing her with her fight. You're just like, why do we keep cutting back to Earth? Who cares? Like, I know this...
I just want to get to know this girl Michelle better. I don't need these guys to talk about her. Just let her punch that bug guy.
Man, this is a tough series to talk about. I'm going to give you my impression of this series off of the three volumes of it I read. There are humans, and there are cockroaches, and the cockroaches will mercilessly and very casually murder every human they come against until finally things look too bleak, and a human will come out and, you know, be equal to them or superior to them for a little bit, and then the bugs get another advantage and start killing more people, and only after about 100 body counts do the humans get whittled down enough to they're like, all right, now here's like 5 people who can kind of fight against you.
That's the impression you might get from how the first part goes. But actually,
I mean, like, I'm sure that once you get past, you know, once you get, because it's running for like 100 chapters, I, you know, I'm sure later on they don't keep having this huge number of disposable characters for them to work through, and, you know, they can actually start developing these things. But from the point I got through 3 volumes of it, it was nonstop death. And it's just the worst kind of death, and none of these characters have any personality. None of them. They're just the base bone, boring characters. A lot of them have these backstories that are almost entirely fueled off of the death of some female love interest. There aren't enough refrigerators in all of the Sears in the country to stuff all the women that this series needs to into.
If it weren't for, like, Michelle Davis, then, yeah.
She's, like, the one. But every other female...
And she is awesome.
She is. But it comes at the cost of, like, 5 characters before her who just get unceremoniously, like, punched off into death.
Because it starts off with, you know, Shokichi and, like, his childhood friend slash love interest is the first to die.
Yeah.
And it's the most anticlimactic way. It's just like the guy reaches out, grabs her head, and breaks her neck. And that's it.
It's so jarring because they see a bug and I forget his name, Koichi or something like that. He's like...
Komachi.
He starts to pull out a gun and she's like, no, remember, we said we'd handle this diplomatically. And he's like... Dear cockroach, we would like to, and then the cockroach just like slaps her face and her neck is broken, and you're just like, what the fuck?
And then...
And then they explain, oh, but feel bad for her because she was raped and beaten by her father.
And then later on, you meet two of the these other guys. There are these two guys who grew up in Mexico, Alex and Marcos. And they're, like, obsessed with baseball, and they were poor, and they would, like, have ended up basically as gangbangers, if not for this rich girl, Sheila, who ends up basically being part of the mission way before them, but then they both join in, and they reunite with her, and they're like, oh, and we'll protect you and stuff like that. She is one of the first to die after they land on the ship.
It's almost like a page-for-page repeat of what happened with the first character.
And Kamachi's there, too!
It's the same thing, and she falls in love with him! So he has to go through it again of being like, no, I may not have had feelings for her, but she did for me, and now this is really sad because she's... It's just like... There's so many times where they'll introduce a character, kill them off, and then explain to you why you should feel bad about it.
Yeah.
And it's just... It's mind-numbingly frustrating. There's series before that I've noted I didn't care for the bleakness of it. You know, like Shokugeki no... Not Shokugeki Sama, that's not a bleak series at all. Shigeki no Kyojin, you know, Attack on Titan, I noted. But the thing I always will gladly respect about Attack on Titan was that it had incredible writing, you know? It was a bleak situation these characters were in, but in the first three volumes of the series, there is not the slightest hint of, like, humanity or just quality writing these characters. They're just bodies. You know, some of them have different abilities, but there's just nothing else to it. There's nothing interesting. And it, for a cast that's promoted with being all multicultural, they only seem to have those different nationalities for one distinct, usually stereotypical thing about them that then kind of never gets addressed again because they either die or they just don't really show up again anymore. And it's just a mind-numbingly frustrating experience to read.
Let's see here. I think that the best... Oh, God. Once they kind of actually get deeper into the Mars mission, they actually have more survivors. And so they actually do... They're forced, basically, to develop their characters more. Mm-hmm. So the cast gets a bit better, basically, the longer that they stick around. But for a long stretch, it's just, here's this guy, here's his power, here's this girl, here's her power. Will one of them die? Maybe. Oh, that one did. And the most frustrating one for me was this, basically, the German leader of the expedition, because, you know, the six different countries that sponsor the expedition each have a squad leader. And so there's this guy who's literally, his name is Adolf, because that's what you want your German leader to be called. Anyway.
Shockingly, not going to be the most offensive Germanly named thing in this podcast this week.
So he basically is just like, he's got like an electric eel. Set of powers. So he keeps on, like, calling out all this electricity and destroying these hordes of roaches. And, like, when you're introduced to him on the battlefield, it starts off like he's surrounded by roach corpses and basically he's going to die. It's like, it's established he's going to die. Then they cuts to earlier and goes through the fight scene. For, like, seven chapters or so, it's just him trying to fight, getting beaten down, his squad mates who he told that he was going to buy time so they could escape, trying to come back in and save him. They fail. He gets back up and kills more roaches. While this is going on, he has a flashback about his entire life, about what he went through, how he was raised essentially as a human weapon, how he fell in love and had a kid, how he's never going to see his wife or kid again. And then at the end of it all, the bomb they implanted in his head blows up so they can't get his powers, and he dies. And his entire squad dies, because instead of doing what he told them to, they just all stuck around so that they would die too. And one of them is literally just there to have big boobs and die. So what, is seven chapters to... These guys died.
That's essentially a volume. A volume's worth of this, everyone's dead.
So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you can maybe get... come to like that character... But really, what's the point? What's the point of building up that character just to kill them if they didn't do anything except die?
These characters exist to have a power that, you know, in some cases look cool. And then ultimately, if there's, you know, these aren't the important character he wants to use anymore, they're just there to inevitably get killed. And that's just, that's the frustrating thing. The first volume, I was ready to stop after the first volume of this. Because it... There's a point that just ungodly irritated me. Like, I can't even stress how much it infuriated me, but There's like this big bug invasion on their ship, and they're like, we have to get out of here. And they're like, you have a power that can help us. You, Water Strider guy. And he's like, oh, me? And they introduce him. Like, this is like your real introduction to him. It's like, he has the power of the Water Strider, and the Water Strider can fire this jet of huge propulsive water that can, you know, get them at great speeds. So he...
I'm thinking of the moment you're talking
about. He and he's like, this is your moment. So he's like, okay. And they get in this car, and he's like, I'm going to fire my propulsive stream, and it'll shoot our car out of this building, and we'll get away from the bugs. He fires his stream out, and the car goes flying. They're like, great job, Jim! Great job! You saved us all! And then it's like, his decapitated head is in the hand of a roach, and his fucking headless body is in the car. And they're like, oh, the bugs are so fast... They grabbed his head while he was firing, and his own power ripped his own body apart, and he's dead now. And you're like, the fuck was the point of him? You could have just had jet boosters in the car, and they would have changed nothing. What was the point of this character?
Well, I can tell you the point of a couple of the characters that die really quickly. Like, one of them is, like, you know, this girl who is, like, your ultimate shielding superpowers, and it just tears her apart.
she gets introduced and dies in, like, the same page.
Well, it's like, that is essentially to say, is like, her literal strength was just to defend herself and be durable, and she also got torn apart, basically. It's one of those things where it's like, it's early on, so we have to build up the Terraformers. After that point, it's really mostly, let's just build up the human characters' powers themselves, and then maybe, you know, there are a whole bunch of special Terraformers who also have, like, individual powers and stuff like that. So... Very early on, I was definitely concerned that everything was just going to go that way. Where it's like, this is the specialty of this one character, and they are super awesome. They're dead now. But then, because the way the series goes along, it's forced to really be more, let's have these two different figures. One of them is human, the other one is just really basically a faceless monster. We'll give them their own special powers, and we'll just have them punch each other until one dies. And... if you enjoy it from that perspective, I think it's actually quite serviceable. I think it's actually quite good at certain points.
I can understand liking that, too. I can understand being like, okay, I understand it's going to be filled with death, but as long as there's, like, action to it, then fine. You know, that can have at least a base purpose of being like, oh, this is exciting. But it, the three volumes that I read, you don't get a lot of that. Generally, when a character dies, it's... they just get their head ripped off screen. Like, it's just the bugs. It's just like, hey, what's going on here? And then, you know, they're fucking torn apart. And then afterwards, it's like, oh, and he was an armadillo man or something like that.
It gets better, basically, as the humans' powers get more and more ridiculous. Let's see, like, the two guys who are obsessed with baseball, Alex is, like, a pitcher, and he gets his powers from the Harpy Eagle. And so he has super awesome eyesight, and he has super awesome gripping power, which means that he can see really far, and also he has incredible control over throwing the special totally not baseballs that he throws. So when it gets into ridiculous stuff, that's like, okay, this is getting better. And honestly, I think my favorite power, though, is this one minor character named KG, whose powers come from the Mantis Shrimp. Do you know what the mantis shrimp is?
Isn't that, like, the rainbow shrimp that's at, like, the bottom of the ocean that's just, like, a fucking monster? Like, it just tears thing apart?
So, first off, is he gets his power of super awesome vision, and then he gets its amazing punching power. And so, he is fighting, like, this guy with this one roach with a super powerful carapace, and he just punches the shit out of it. And they basically have a boxing match at the bottom of this pit, where he has to have the mantis shrimp's awesome eyesight in order to just see anything. Yeah. So, stuff like that is like, okay, I can get into this. Unfortunately, the whole plot of the story is not very interesting, because it's just, now we will try to survive. And also, back on Earth, people are fucking shit up because they're selfish countries and so on and so forth.
There's a question I want to ask you, Nick. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious about this. At the end of the first volume, is a cliffhanger where the Bugs 2 team has returned home. And they cut to, like, this girl and her mom. And the girl's like, Mommy, there's a cockroach in the bathroom. And the mom's like, I'll go and crush the cockroach. And she opens the door, and it's one of the Mars cockroaches. Does that cockroach ever pop back up in the series? Like, does that ever come into effect? Like,
I don't even remember that happening.
I remember it happening. And I was just like, why did the, like, are they going to bring up the fact that a cockroach has returned home with them? Like, what's happening?
Well, that did And they, like, took one as, like, a sample and they, like, changed it up and stuff.
But this was one that was in a house. I guess, like, that could be the one they captured. But I was just like, what is this?
I think that that's coming back to me now. Ish. Hmm.
Oh, that was just an omake? Okay.
Oh. All
right, fair enough. It seemed like I thought maybe it was...
There are definitely, like, a few, like, comedic excerpts.
Okay.
Series.
That makes more sense, then. I was just wondering, I was like...
That would definitely make the series take a very different direction.
I was like, are they going to bring up that one cockroach that was hanging out on Earth?
That seems like a very, like, difficult thing to hide.
Like, he just stops being monstrous and mean, he just starts becoming, like, a random door-to-door salesman or something like that. Doesn't talk. He just stands there, holds a vacuum cleaner at you for an hour and a half.
No, he does talk. He just goes...
You're just like, I don't need a vacume cleaner. Our house has hardwood floors.
I do love the way that the roaches talk in the series. Okay. So, Chris, final verdict on Terraform Mars.
I hated it, Nick. I honestly think it's one of the worst series I've read. I hated it. I can't stress how much I hate it. To me, I don't care if you want to have a lot of death in your series, but you need to do something with it. You need to tell a story. Like, I'm currently watching Walking Dead right now, and I like it because, yes, amidst all the death and bleakness and horribleness of it, there's moments of humanity discussed. And for the first 3 volumes, I didn't get any of that. You know, there's no character development of any kind. So, from reading it, I was just like, this is just nonsensical death that has absolutely no purpose or meaning to it. I can't get into this whatsoever. And to be honest, the backstories they do started to just piss me off. The more frequently it was just, here's this, you know, sick girl character I know and she's dead now, but I'll use that as my motivation. Or, hey, I had this girlfriend and, oh, she got raped and abused by her father, but she's dead now and it's going to be my motivation to go forward. You're just like, this is the shittiest, laziest kind of writing. Where you have no direction for this character, you're just going to kill someone off to use as motivation for this other character I don't give a fuck about, and you're just going to keep introducing characters who are only there for this one flash in the pan, look at this power, hey, look, now they're dead. It just bothered me to no end. That's why I stopped after 3 volumes. After 3 volumes, I was like, this is still not changing, I'm done with it. And I understand what you're saying, where as the series gets better, you continue to get characters who start to get more development. The battles start becoming prolonged. It stops.
I'm not saying it actually gets good.
I'm not. Yeah, but I could understand the idea that as the series goes on, it stops being as bad as I was feeling it was. But I still couldn't stand it. It's not necessarily as bad as, say, like a Freezing or a Wolf Guy. Wait, whatever that stupid series was. It's not as bad as them on, like, an offensive level, but it's almost like, at least there was some kind of writing in that. Like, even if it was horrible, like, I just felt like Terraformers had nothing. Like, I just felt like I was, like, watching one death scene to the next and just nothing into it whatsoever. So that just, it just is completely against what I like in storytelling.
It definitely needs work on more of the character moments. There are some here and there, but even later on, there aren't enough. And, it's, for the most part, yeah, a lot of the characters are really either archetypical or stereotypes or just kind of bland. And I definitely see where you're coming from to say, like, you just couldn't think of, you know, what to do. So we'll stuff this girl in the fridge and, you know, drama, character motivation, there you go. Which, it's weird because that in particular did not need to happen to establish Shokichi's motivation in the future. Could have just very well had him just be a member of a crew and, like, everyone around him died. And so that motivates him in order to protect his crew when he's the leader in the future.
I mean, he is essentially...
The actual childhood friend dying doesn't really play into it, except that he understands the feelings of two of his men who go through one of their childhood friends dying.
It's honestly, you could even just told the story of a lone survivor. He's essentially a lone survivor in that group. It's him and one other guy make it out. And I mean, you could just said, hey, he got really close to that entire group of people up there. And he had to watch almost all of them die in front of him. I mean, it just, it felt unnecessary.
Yeah. Survivor's Guild type story could be interesting. Mm. But he seems to be a pretty cheerful guy, despite all of that. So, I don't know. It's definitely a series that's got some very big problems with it. If you enjoy it on a very base level, I can understand why. It's got people with bug powers punching each other. So there you go. That's really, honestly, the best thing.
I feel like we might have enjoyed this series more had we not read Arachnid last year. Because I felt like, I was like, this isn't even special. I've seen bug-based powers before.
But Chris, this one is without all the creepy fan service.
There's still a little of it.
Well,
like that one...
It's normal just, fan service, at least.
Oh, God. There was one scene I just forgot. It's when the Annex, I think, is the ship with 100 people in it, is flying out there.
Are you talking about the shower scene?
And they peek in, and they're just like, that girl's been in the shower forever. And they peek in, and they see, like, a face staring back at them, like a girl's face.
They're like, oh, God, I'm so sorry.
And then the door opens, and it's a fucking cockroach holding, like, the half of this girl's corpse, like, as he drags her out. You're just like, oh, come on, man.
I actually thought that was actually really clever. Like they thought that they had a cockroach. Like, no, that's her corpse.
Where were the cockroaches? Like, I didn't get it. Like, why did they wait until, like, day 58 of their adventure to be like, well, now we'll strike?
They came, like, from, like, super orbit, I think.
Oh,
like, as they were descending, they managed to get to the ship. Because they established later on, you must have stopped before this, they established later on that one of the things that they discovered from previous ships was basically how humans worked and how they traveled to their planet and stuff, and so they actually understood how the ship worked. So,
Now the point I got to, they were just introducing. Oh, hey, and the bugs took the powers of the people who came previously.
Yeah, which I mean is a very important. It's a very important development there because even when you have like some of the Roaches are more intelligent and are the leaders and understand how to, you know, lead their fellow Roaches to pick up the guns that the humans dropped and stuff. It's like, yeah, but they're just, you know, faceless bug, you know, monster characters who are all the exact same. It at least erases the problem of all the villains' powers are the exact same and replaces that with some of them have special powers, like, you know, the humans do, but they still don't have any personality.
Yeah, they're still just, you know, because they mentioned that several times, the Terraformars look at humans the same way humans, you know, rather ironically look at bugs on Earth when we squash them. They don't feel anything. They're just something to, you know, be killed.
But yeah, I am not exactly high on this series. I'm not going to actually really give it a recommendation, except like if you think it sounds really intriguing and you want to see some actually pretty good fight scenes, they're well drawn, I think, then check it out.
Yeah, there's some cool art in it. I'll give this series a few compliments. And I do like the art, and I feel like I can definitely recommend this to somebody if you aren't, if that, you know, this kind of storytelling we've mentioned very frequently throughout this episode, that, you know, very casual death is not something that bothers you. You're actually, you know, you like that sort of thing. If you liked Attack on Titan, or if you've liked Gantz, or if you liked any of them, so it's not necessarily exactly like them, and I'm not going to say which ones are better or worse than them. I don't want to go into that comparison. But it's along those same lines. If you like that kind of storytelling in manga, I think you will like this. It's just for me, I couldn't get into it.
Okay. So, shall we move on to the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap?
I believe we shall.
All right. Bleach 620. Where do you stand?
Where do you stand, Nick?
Team
Ryu.
Team Bleach sucks. So, this chapter is, Bishida has just, you know, stopped Ichigo from interfering with Juhabak as he turns his attention back on Ryo. And everyone's like, Uryu! Really, like, half a page is just characters going, Uryu. Dot, dot, dot.
I like that at the start of it, it's like, it keeps showing, like, Chad and Orihime and all of them. They're just like, they don't do anything, though. Because even a shot of, like, them in the background, like, as fucking Ichigo and Ryu are arguing, and they're just, like, they're so far in the background, like, it's just like, here's the characters that won't do anything.
So, yeah, she just basically, like, you know, if you come any closer, I'm gonna shoot you, and Ichigo takes a step forward, Ishida shoots him, and Ichigo has to deflect it, and he's like, I told you I'd do it. And Ichigo's like, what are you doing, Ishida? Don't you understand the world's gonna disappear if you have don't stop Juhabak? He's like, yeah, I do know that. Then what are you doing over there? I'm a Quincy. So I'm loyal to the Quincy leader.
This is, it's kind of a, yeah, I got what he was saying, but it's such a weird line of like, You know, they're going to destroy reality. What do you think about that? I'm a Quincy. Like, oh, okay. Are you still cool with the whole reality ending thing? Yeah, I guess.
Oh, God. So, the other elite Quincys come in. They surround the unimportant characters.
I love them doing, like, the back-to-back pose. Like, I'm expecting something's actually going to happen out of this. Like, guys, band together. Together we can beat these guys. Like, no, you won't. Chad's in there.
These guys who crushed the fuck out of your Ricci. Yeah. We'll be good. So, shoot Stoffel. There we go. Thor guy, you know, is just like, ah, look at this bunch of foot soldiers. Whatever. We're going to stop them. And she's like, I don't need your help. I'll stop them anyway. And he basically blows up the ground beneath Ichigo's feet, and Ichigo's like, here he is! As he falls. And then Exaxis guy shoots down after Ichigo and seemingly hits him and kills him forever.
Like, Unohana? Is Ichigo dead and never coming back, Nick?
Like, Unohana? So then the guy's like, I know what you want to say. They can't possibly survive the fall. Well, I've seen Disney movies, and they're completely unrealistic. Basically, I just, you know, shot them to make sure. To make absolutely certain. You know, if you kill them before they fall, who cares? You know, she's like, whatever. You know.
He's like, and you know, gorillas wouldn't talk to elephants. I know that's what Tarzan wants you to believe, but they'd never really hang out.
Also, I've calculated the force necessary to hang yourself on vines. Those would have snapped when Clayton fell.
Just you're like, all right, that's very good. Another thing, Frozen? I don't understand how everything was covered in ice. Did it extend past the continent or not?
Also, I'm beginning to think that song about letting it go was meant to convey that it's not good to let everything go, and that you actually should hold yourself back from certain courses of action. I don't think people understood that from the context of the film.
Furthermore, Frozen had very awful parents. They were monsters who told their child to conceal, yet everyone's supposed to feel bad that their parents are dead. I concur that their kids are much better off for their parents' death.
Look at how those other characters
are. Like, that's just X-Axis saying he just complains about Disney movies. He's a fucking YouTube reviewer now.
She just, like, walked off and was like, and another thing, I found Wreck-It Ralph.
He just turns to Thor and he's just like, let me tell you about Little Mermaid's problems. Thor's just like, I'm deaf, buddy. I'm drunk off my ass. You can tell me whatever you want.
Shoot stuff is like the only Disney movie I actually watch is Thor.
I've watched it 28 times.
I like his helmet. He doesn't wear it enough. I don't care if people think it's silly. I like it. So, meanwhile, Jihabak is interacting with the whatever it was called, the hand that surrounded Reo, and he says, oh, right, all made of Reishi. See, even he's forgotten the name of it. So you want to consume me, your own child? Well, you may have seen the future, but you could not foresee the difference in our strength. You are far inferior to what I am now. I am taking your power. And he just grabs it, and darkness kind of molds around his hand as he rips it, starts to rip it away from Ryo. Earthquakes start to come around, and Soul Society and Uruha is like, what's happening? Well, obviously something bad is happening to Ryo. I mean, come on, man. I mean, did you think that he just, like, couldn't try and cut it in half again? What?
They're like, but we released Aizen!
Manuki Take died for this cause!
Yeah, his sacrifice couldn't be in vain.
So Jihabak basically becomes surrounded in the thing, and he's got even more eyes now on his neck and stuff, and darkness dripping everywhere. I am taking everything from Reo. I will put a lid on the Seirete. Until I take Reo, make him my own and devour him, nothing will get in my way. And also, this black lance comes out from his finger and shoots down from the Soul King's palace towards Soul Society below, it seems.
They gasp.
So apparently he changed his mind, and instead of destroying everything, he wants to take it over.
I guess we'll see. It makes more sense if he's like, yeah, instead of destroying reality, why don't I just recreate it in my image?
Why build from scratch when you can just move in? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's a simple thought. It's a simple logic, everybody. Keep the pace. Nick, there's some controversy about this chapter.
Why is there controversy?
At one point, Thor shows up and starts interrupting things, and Ryu says, I don't need any assistance from the Schutzstiefel. Which, if you know your German and you know your history, the Schutzstiefel is also more commonly known as the SS, was the name of Hitler's private security force who did very awful things during World War II and the Holocaust. And a lot of people take umbrage with the fact that Kubo would name one of his villain groups after the SS. We got an email from one of our German listeners, Brala, who mentioned her particular displeasure at this because it's not a very positive thing to remember. It's not a very, you know, good reference to be reminded of. So to German readers, it might not be the best memory to have.
I understand.
What say you?
I understand that in general, Germans look on bad time because, you know, it was tourism out of horrors and, you know, the country... A great portion of the country, not all Germans, you know, but a great portion of the country bought into that message and allowed that group of people to carry out some horrific acts. And so in general, they look on that time with a sense of very, very deep shame, which, you know, is understandable. And so it really plays on some very, very, very bad things. It would be like if a character in a series that we were covering, you know, had just a whole bunch of, you know, slaves that were akin to African Americans, and it'd be like, ugh, he was a slave master and stuff. It, you know, makes me feel very uncomfortable. So I definitely understand that. In general, however, I mean, the Vandenreich have a lot of similarities to the, you know, German military of that time because of, you know, the whole German theme, and you can see it in some of the uniforms and stuff like that. So I'm not surprised at this, but I do understand why it's, you know, causes that discomfort. So I understand it, yeah. It is meant to, it is definitely meant to evoke that as a whole. This is not an isolated instance.
Mm-hmm. It seems like poor form to specifically name them that, but, I mean, it's not like I'm surprised necessarily that that's what Bleach did. I'm a bit bemused, though, that they, you know, they've kept to this theme of, like, you know, we're Germans. The Quincy's all have German-sounding names and all German-sounding powers and organization names. Yet one of their, like, prominent members was a fucking Mexican wrestler. And like it's just, like, this weird mishmash of, like, one of you guys has a fucking, like, cowboy hair hat. Like, just random shit. Like, that's, like, Thor's a part of your team.
By the way, Thor guy's name is Gerard Valkyrie. That was his name. So, yeah. Leah the Barrow, that was the sniper guy's name. Okay.
The X-axis.
With the hat hair.
I don't get it. What is his hair? Like, what is it?
Which part is his hair and which part is a hat, or is it all hair?
Yeah, like, did you just fashion your hair to be a hat? Because I would say I've not seen that before. It is rather distinct, sir. You are ungodly stupid, though, for doing it. This is an okay chapter of Bleach. I'm almost liking this now as Yuhabok becomes more and more absurdly, like, cartoonish. Like, he's just like, now I have even more eyes! Look at my neck! There are eyes on my neck now!
He's gonna, like, take off his shoes next to him. Hang on, I've got eyes on my toes! Look!
I can see if you're trying to make me step on something bad.
But you're going to put boots over those and won't be able to see. Be quiet! I see all!
Yeah. I see beyond the boot! Can you really? No, boots actually block my powers. It's one of my biggest weaknesses.
Everyone's like, quick, throw boots at him!
Grimmy, imagine a really big boot! No one can imagine that!
What if you imagined a whole bunch of boots? You can't have more than two! That's ridiculous!
That's absurd! I'm a brain in a jar, not a goddamn magician.
Also, I'm dead. Fairy Tale is next, yeah?
Yes, Fairy Tale, chapter 425, Sabretooth X792. The cover page is in color, showing the different members of the guild that they introduced last
week. Avatar,
that's right. I was trying to remember the name of them. The guild that Gray is a part of because he's evil now, Nick.
Oh, is he?
Yes. So we open up back at Luvia's house in the village of Neverending Rain as Wendy cares over her, but she notes...
I'm going to be useless this arc. Bye,
even
guys.
Even my healing magic can't bring her fever down, which is rather amusing that, like, I forgot she was a healer for a while. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, she's supposed to have, like, support magic. I forget because it never comes in handy ever.
Because the only time if she has anything in combat is worth her Sky Dragon stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's usually, yeah, she just breathes at people. And that's sort of the extent of her powers.
When he's there wiping her brow after all that effort, and she's like, if only cutting my hair could solve this problem.
Well, let's see if it can't.
What if I give her a wardrobe change? Maybe she'll feel better then.
That'd be great. They come back. Wendy's just like, cut all of it. She's just like, guys, I cut all of my hair and Luvia wouldn't wake up. I don't know what to do.
It's definitely, it's gonna end up being one of those things where it's like, you know, we've done everything we can to treat her medically, but as long as she feels sad, as long as she doesn't have the will to live.
As long as her heart isn't healed, Nick, she won't pull out of this fever she has, I think.
That's so lame.
Anyway, they left Wendy behind, because Natsu, he doesn't say it, but Natsu essentially wants the soul of this mission, and... In the process of it, he's going to be a tremendous douche to everybody. I'm just going to forewarn you now. So they're riding off on some tiger beast they found somewhere. Yeah. It's kind of cool. I wish this was like a thing in their world. They explained more. Like, yeah, we ride around on wolves instead of horses because fuck the Alliance. And they're heading over towards Sabretooth's guild. And Lucy's like, oh, hey, you really think we're going to find anything about Grayth over there? And Natsu's actually very, like... dismissive and what we call it when they're like avoiding the issue.
Avoiding the issue?
Yeah, you're kind of he's not answering her directly. He knows more than he's laying on. I can't think of
indirect. I guess
there's an actual word for it. I
non-confrontational.
Dodgy.
Dodgy.
Not dodgy, but dodgy close enough. He's being dodgy about it. She's asking him like, hey, you know, what's going on? Why aren't you kind of talking about things? He's like, look, I can't tell you anything. I trust Gray, but we have to stop trusting him or he won't get the information we need. And she's like, I don't get what you mean. He's like, we have to stop trusting him, but then we'll find him and we'll trust him again. That's what I'm saying. She's like, I still don't get it. You said the exact same thing again and didn't clarify at all. And he's like, Lucy, I'm gonna bring Gray back, but don't ask any more questions. Which seems kind of douchey. But they run into Sabretooth, and they talk to, you know, the various Sabretooth members. They see Lester.
This is such a weird detail they throw in.
And he's gotten fat as shit. Like, he's ballooned up, but he's still trying to wear the same clothes.
And Natsu, you haven't changed a bit. And it's like, right back at you. Lucy's like, he has changed completely!
Sorry, it's Sting, not Lester. Lecter is the cat. But, yeah, Sting's gotten fat, and everyone's like, hey, where's Frosh? And they're like, well, Frosh is out with Rogue and the princess on a mission. And Natsu's like, I need to know where they're at. Tell me where they're at. And he runs off after him, leaves Natsu or Lucy behind even, too. And for some reason, then, Yukina shrinks Sting back.
She summoned Libra just to siphon off all his fat, and then they explained the reason he was fat was just because he was in an eating contest. That was it.
They're just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We almost made a drastic character alteration in appearance after our 2-year time skip. This was, what are we doing?
It was a 1-year time
skip. Oh, it's only a 1-year? I could have sworn it was a 2-year time skip. Yeah. All right, well, then I don't have a problem with time issues later in this with plot holes. Because I was really like, hey, wow, moment fairy tale. I could do basic math, which clearly I couldn't based on the fact I didn't know when the years were. But Natsu is running off. He finds Rogue and Minerva. And
I like Minerva's hair.
Okay.
Just want to throw that out there.
She does have a nicer appearance now. She's not as mean and cruel.
Designed to appear evil, basically.
Yeah. And she specifically, you know, she's... Basically what happens is Natsu shows up, grabs Rogue by the collar, and is just like, get out of here! And Fro's like, Fro, we'll talk too! Pine, pine!
And Natsu says, no!
Fuck off! And afterwards, it leaves Minerva and Lucy behind. And Minerva's like, hey, how are you doing? Sorry about the whole torturing you in that underwater battle thing we did once. That was kind of poor form on me. And Lucy brushes away by being like, nope, it was just the spirit of competition.
I'm glad that she got that apology, though.
I'm glad she got the apology. I think it's weird that Lucy's, like, brushing it off. Like, it was just competition. We would all have done it.
We were all wearing swimsuits. It didn't really count.
I was like, didn't she, like, fucking, like, completely annihilate you and, like, fucking toy with how badly she was kicking your ass? But it's nice Minerva.
It's a nice detail because, you know, it kind of gets rid of the idea that out of all the characters that could interact after, you know, alignments change, think that Lucy might hold a little bit of a grudge. Was like, well, at least she apologized.
Yeah, man, it's good that we get that. And they actually do note why Sabretooth hasn't been competing in the Magic Tournament. They were like, look, we didn't want to. It would feel regrettable with the absence of Fairy Tail. It wouldn't be fun. And you know, Lucy notes, don't worry, Fairy Tail isn't gone. It's always right here in our hearts.
Just such a lame line.
It's a lame line, and also the like angle of it. It's really like Fairy Tail isn't gone. It's still right here in my massive tits. My massive tits, which one can store an enormous amount of goldfish to hide in a pool. The other one can store our guild. It's called utility. Also, Froze says Froze too,
and then Happy says me too.
Yeah,
it's like Happy. Don't encourage him, man.
Well, Nick, you're
already pretty low on my list of characters from best to worst, man.
You're only a couple steps ahead of the other cat, all right? You don't need to get lower. You don't need to get to his level.
You're already the second worst cat.
Anyway, Rogue and Natsu finally stop, and Natsu asks him about the mission that they're going on, and Rogue reveals that they were on a mission to destroy the Black Magic Cult Avatar, and Natsu's like, this is it. I'm taking this job. And, you know, Rogue's like, what the fuck? It's my job. You don't even have a guild. And Natsu's like, but I'm Fairy Tail, and I'll just give you the money anyway. So I just need you to promise you will not let Froge leave this town. You know, don't either of you leave until I get back. And again, Natsu's just
not going to explain why.
Yeah, Natsu's like, I can't explain this to you. Just trust me on this. Bye. And he grabs Lucy's hand because she showed up again, apparently.
We caught up.
And they run off. And before I leave, yells off, Minerva, keep a close eye on Rogue and Frosh. Don't let them leave town. And we flush back to the moment when future Rogue had been defeated by Natsu and was fading back. And he's like, in 1 year, tell the other me to protect Frosh. A year from now, Frosh will be killed by Gray. And Natsu says to himself, Gray is the one man Fairy Tail can't do without. And that's the end of the chapter.
Femme.
Yeah, I think I'm more important, but, you know, this is the Gray arc.
So it seems this might actually be kind of a big deal, this arc.
Possibly. This might be, you know, we still haven't seen whether it'll play into your theory or not that Gray's, you know, fully aware of what he's doing and this isn't like an evil Gray twist. But I guess we'll see. It's just sort of weird for Natsu to be so evasive. That's the word I was looking for. Evasive. He's being very evasive on everything like this. And I can understand not telling Rogue, because you're like, if he knows that this is the situation that might get Frosh killed, maybe he'll feel like he has to step in to keep it from happening. Like, just that pride will keep him from doing it. But to not mention anything to Lucy or Minerva or anybody else, to keep all of them in the dark just feels like kind of like a douchey thing. It's also kind of weird that we brought back Wendy. She didn't do anything. She didn't really get to stand in her own arc. And we're going to keep her on the sidelines in this one anyway. It's like, oh, okay, I guess it's just Natsu saves everybody. Natsu solves Fairy Tail's problems.
Natsu's like, no blue hairs on this mission.
No time.
Okay.
But it's fine. Nick, do you think the prophecy will come to pass and Frosh will be killed?
Well, no, because that timeline's the whole, like, multiple timelines from that storyline are already fucked anyway because future Lucy died and stuff, and it was all just, like, proved that causation and effect have no correlation in Fairy Tail, apparently. So that means that Sting does not necessarily have to become evil in order to become future Sting because fuck everything, you know. That's not how Fairy Tail works, basically. Mm-hmm. So, probably not.
All right, well...
Although if Frosh died, I'd be very happy.
It would be pretty sweet. You'd have one less bad character to have to deal with.
Yeah. Food Wars?
Yes. Shokugeki no Soma.
Chapter 111, A Full Course Meal. So the group at Chinomiya's restaurant finishes up basically all the construction and stuff, and Chinomiya says, all right, tomorrow will be the pre-opening reception for Shino's Tokyo. And, so someone's like, what's a pre-opening? They're like, it's basically like a test run. It's kind of, actually, this kind of reminded me of this thing that like some theaters do, which is basically before opening night, they just like have a special opening night for like friends and family sometimes. Basically, it's just like, you know, do the whole play in front of a live audience, and then when the actual big opening happens, then we'll have worked out some of the kinks and stuff. And we get introduced to some of the members of the restaurant. We get Galway, who is a service manager, Lucy Hugo, who's a meat course chef, and you know, they're all introducing themselves to someone and stuff like that, and Lucy is like, you'll be my assistant starting off, and so someone's like, okay. And Chinomiya is like, all right, let's do everything we can. We've got sky-high expectations because of my reputation, so let's make this place a success. And basically, they also established, by the way, we're also going to be, you know, accepting, essentially, submissions to the menu. So if you really impress me later on, then you might get put on the menu. And someone's like, hey, oh, can I be in that contest too? And Chinomiya's like, yes, I'm always willing to listen to the opinion of competent people, no matter how low on the totem pole they are. And in the background, Abel, who was featured in flashbacks when Chinomiya was first introduced, and Chinomiya would scold him all the fucking time for trying to make alterations to his recipes. It was just like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? I feel kind of bad for him, but by the end of the chapter, it's just like, whatever, this douchebag.
This jerk face. Being mean.
So Soma is already thinking to himself about what to do. The next day, everyone gets ready after Soma's kind of like talked himself up in his head. He's like, yeah, I'll do my best. I'll do my work as assistant. And then I'll dive into the new recipe competition on the last day. He comes in. He's wearing like a chef's uniform. And Chinomiya is like all angry at him because he actually looks pretty good in the chef's uniform. He's like upset that he doesn't look ridiculous.
I mean, he does kind of look like a GQ model in that pose. Like, if you just put like a beach behind him and like a fucking umbrella, you'd be like, oh man, it's like right out of an American Eagle catalog or something.
I love the way that Chinomiya phrases it too. He's like, that chef's gonna look surprisingly acceptable on you. I was all ready to laugh at you too. And so much just like, what do you mean, surprisingly, sir?
Well, it was like the idea that he's like, he'd already prepared his laugh. He's like, ha ha, no, too obvious. No, too goofy. Yes, that's good. That's what I'll do.
Don't you think that's too evil, sir? You're fired!
Nothing's too evil for me. You're not a villain, but I want to be.
Oh, I'm not the villain anymore. I miss it. So someone like looks over the menu and stuff at the start. He's trying to basically, like, oh, okay, we've got all these full course meals and how they go and stuff like that. I've been sort of prepped for this at the institution, but knowing exactly what to cook, you know, that kind of makes it easy, that, you know, doesn't it? And so he gets set at his station, and suddenly he's overwhelmed by this sense of tension that falls over the whole kitchen, and everyone is getting really tense. Abel's just super focused, and Galme is kind of breathing, and Lucy makes the sign of the cross and prays to God. It's the pre-opening chill! And then Chinomiya comes in, and he's looking all ominous, and he's just like, the customers are seated. And then, with a black speech bubble, let's go! He is the villain!
So Nick, rushes to- it's your own rookie tendencies that is the true villain in this.
So, you know, Soma is just like, you know, looking around everywhere. It's like, oh man, everyone's so quiet and fast, and there's no noise. But as he's like carrying pots around, they clank together a little bit. Shinomi is like, no unnecessary noise. Be quiet. Do that again, and you're gone. And Soma realizes it's because he needs to hear even the tiniest changes in the sound as he's cooking. So he basically rededicates himself to being quieter. Food starts going out. People in the dining room basically imagine that they're playing Quidditch.
They're magical people, Nick. Although somehow the guy in it, like,
He's not good at flying his broomstick.
He fell off his broomstick, but he's still like, my cloak got caught.
He got caught. He's fine. He's still enjoying it.
I'm a bird.
Okay. So everyone's like, oh, it's amazing. And someone's rushing around, and Lucy, you know, just very, you know, sternly says to him, you know, don't get behind. You know, you got to do that, and you got to do that. Do it quickly. And someone's just like, oh, God, there's so much to do. Even though the most basic of prep work has a dozen more steps to it than that of a family restaurant. Not only that, the main dishes take so much time that they need to be worked on simultaneously with the appetizers. And so Lucy then says, you know, you got to get out the pasta thingy. And someone's like, wait, what are you? Oh, God. And so he's basically falling behind, and Lucy is like, all right, you got to do that, you got to do that, you got to do that. And so, okay, I'll do it. And so someone's like, okay, all right, I can manage this. But then suddenly Lucy realizes, where's the mirepoix? He's like, oh shit, this is already, I messed up. And he's just falling behind for the pace. And she's like, I'm sorry, it's not done yet. And so he realizes, you know, full course meals are just different because you've got to prepare all this stuff to go out at all these different times and stuff. And it's all going to go perfectly because food is being sent back in and the next dish has to be immediately ready to send back out. So Sheena Maya makes the decision, or not, doesn't make the decision. She's like, okay, you hear it. You need to start on this. And you know, Lucy, you know, set the table three to the side, work on this fish course instead. You know, he's making changes and stuff like that. And then he turns to Abel and says, mop up, you can hear a screw up. And Abel steps in and he's like, okay, move out of the way. And someone just says, all right, yes, sir. You know, no confrontations like you would see in Bambino or something. Someone realizes, I've got to get out of the way. He realizes his limitations, and he just, you know, is like, accepts it. And so he basically thinks to himself, this is a really big important difference, you know, to the environments I've worked in before. If I fall behind here, that affects everybody in the kitchen. It's not, I can't just work double pace in order to catch back up anymore. So Abel then is just like, by the way, I'm the villain for this arc, and gives him this big lecture where he's like, just so you know, I don't think of you as a member of this team. And Gami's like, hey, you don't even... No! Oh, do you disagree? This kitchen doesn't need anyone who slows down the flow of work. I'm the head chef of Shino's Tokyo. It's my job to oversee everyone's efforts. Do you get it now? You're just an intern. Don't go thinking you're good enough to weasel your way onto this team. Now that you understand your place, going... And someone's immediately like, I'm sorry, I'll get right on it. Doesn't even, like, let him finish his talking down to you speech and just gets back to work. Which... I like that moment. You know, I really like this. Someone is not quite your stereotypical Shonen protagonist. He doesn't confront people on everything. He understands his place, and he's just like, I'll just rededicate myself and keep on going. So, yeah.
Yeah, and he does. He immediately gets back into it, and he starts serving the food up. And it's kind of weird, because last year we read Bambina, and Bambina was essentially a series of this one scene. You know,
over and over,
carried over, a 200 chapter series or something like that,
and also a lot more painful each time.
Yeah, and that series, you know, I forget his name, Bambina is what they called him. You know, when he get confronted on this, he'd usually, you know, fall low, and that's, you know, when the situation came up, I was like, we're kind of seeing that again. But what's cool is, as you said, when Soma gets confronted with it, it's the immediate like, I'm sorry, I'll get right on it, and he's back in at work. And that's what I kind of really like about Soma, is he's this, you know, protagonist that when he sees the mistake, he doesn't, like, have that, you know, moment where he's just like, fuck, now I need to dwell on the fact that I made this mistake. He's immediately like, let me try to fix it, and go as fast as I can. And that's obviously...
Because he doesn't have the luxury of being able to mope about it and just be kicked out of the kitchen and stuff, because, I mean, that would be the end of the series, basically.
Yeah, but it's also clearly something expected of him, because the head chef smiles when he sees that happen. It's clearly something he was expecting, or something that, a trait within Soma that he knew was in there, like something that he's glad to see. So even though he's angry Soma made the mistake, he's clearly like, that's the kind of dedication I want. You know, like, that's the admirable trait in our heroes. You know, he falls, he gets right the fuck back up.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool.
So yeah, looking more forward to this now, because, you know, It's definitely a different situation than someone was in at the last restaurant, so it'll be interesting to see him take on this new challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to Gakkyu Hotei, Chapter 15, Evil Spirit 5 Meters Deep, Part 2, a.k.a. Ayn's dad is kind of creepy.
No, he's not, Nick.
He does this thing right at the start of the chapter where he tries to do a thing where he's like, oh, my daughter, you're looking so cute and stuff. But he does it while she's wearing her swimsuit and he, like, takes out his phone and takes a picture of her.
And he's like, you look so good in your regulation swimwear.
And Pine says, I keep asking you not to come to my schools. Oh.
So last week when we were like, oh, he just shows up in fucking Pine's locker room when she's dressing, maybe isn't as far off as we thought.
It's just a habit of his, just show up.
Like he just bursts in like, hello, little daughter, you look great in your little tiny underwear. Let me take a picture of you for the scrapbook. She's like, I'm 8! He's like, oh yes, you're growing up so big. Ladies, please, get out of the way. It's a father sharing a moment with his daughter. It's not weird.
So, Raichi says, like, oh, come on, what's wrong with me visiting you? A student's guardian has the right to inspect school grounds. Or is it that you've got something to hide from your parent? He glares at her and lightning crackles around his eye. And she shivers and stuff. And so, Abakumi steps in and is like, I don't care if you're Green Pineapple's father. And she's like, green? Anyway, school judgment is a system for children. By the children.
I like the idea that Raichi's like the rest of the audience were just like, why does he call her Pineapple again? Like, what was the joke in this? Like, I know it's a joke on pine, but where does the green keep coming in?
Yeah, I like that's the detail he's on to. It's like, Pineapple I get. Why green Pineapple?
Yeah. Does my daughter wear a lot of green?
Maybe she has green hair? I forget. So yeah, Buck is like, you don't belong here, you know, you don't come intruding into our business. And Raichi says, ah, you seem to be unaware of Article 27. An exception shall be made for certain adults, should they be properly qualified, limited to guardians of involved parties, including the accused, attorneys, or prosecutors, to be permitted to class sessions. And so Baku's like, is that right? He's like, questioning Sarutobi. I know.
Yes, Toby's like, why did you ask me? You see him wearing a loincloth.
So, Archie's like, alright, let's get into the paperwork. The charge is obstruction of swim class and mass slaughter of goldfish. I think I glossed over that detail the first time. Mass slaughter of goldfish.
It's a damning accusation.
Yeah. He says, the accused is Satomi Yamada, boob girl, whose boobs go boom when she reacts in shock, because of course they do. And so she says, you shall be indicted as the evil spirit 5 meters deep. And everyone's like, what? No, not the top-soothing presence of Classics 3, because they like her boobs, because they're perfect.
And it's even like a little flashback to Tonto's friend, who's just like, wow, your boobs are huge. And she's like, it's because I drank lots of milk.
Because that's how that works.
I was like, yeah, this is science, Nick. I drank a lot of milk as a kid. It's how I ended up with breasts. So, clearly the logic works both ways.
So, Raichi says, yes, I looked up intel on 10 elementary students. I did not neglect monitoring the pool either. And Satoyan, during lunch break, you finished changing 30 minutes earlier than anyone else and trespassed into the empty pool alone, did you not? And you were just there in the bushes in your trench coat looking at her.
He's just there with a little like telescope, like, yes, yes.
You're committing crime, you naughty girl.
It's okay, I have a child in this school, I'm not a weirdo.
I see the angle of that flashback shot. Don't you try and lay this off as anything innocent.
No, it's needing to make sure she wasn't hiding the goldfish in her butt. That's what I do.
It is also sizable, so no. Gotta explore that option as well.
Yeah.
So Baku's like, wait a minute, Higashide was watching the pool, so can you, verify that? And Higashide says, yes, she did enter the pool, but, you know, she wasn't doing anything, she was just practicing the flutter kick. And Raichi says, I wonder about that, because scrutinizing her past grades, she has an E in swimming, which is far and away her worst subject. She can barely swim at all. And so, you know, Baku says, ah, you looked through all of grade 6's report cards in half a day? So this is what adults are capable of.
We've seen a lot of other things adults are capable of in this series, or in this chapter. I don't think we like any of them.
So Pine says, well, yeah, but, you know, she could have just been practicing because she is bad at it, you know, in order to overcome her, you know, her shortcomings. And Raichi says, my dear Pine, don't you do poorly on the vault box? When you were in third grade, you faked a leg sprain to get out of the vault box drill. And another time, you feigned illness to set out a long-distance run, racking one's meager brains to try to escape onerous or disliked things instead of confronting them head-on. That's how children's minds work fundamentally. No. Which sounds like... God, that's like ageist, isn't it?
It's very, like, fuck you kids. You lazy fucks. Rock and roll music was good when I was around.
I'm big, you're small, I'm smart, you're dumb. So shut up, God. So yeah, he says, like, you know, nothing irregular occurred up to fourth period. So Satayan's the only possible suspect. Her motive to get the swim class she detests canceled. And Yama's like, no, it weren't me. It weren't.
It weren't. They say that, all. Nick.
Well, because weren't is it weren't. But you said it. So it weren't me. That bothers me.
That's like the one hang-up you have this week. It's just like, it weren't is improper grammar to begin with. I'm taking this to Japan. Mr. Gakyo Hotai must hear this.
It tis bothersome. Anyway, so Higashide is just thinking to himself, like, I know this feeling better than you. Wait a minute. Oh, that is Higashide. Okay. He's like, I know better than anyone that Yamada is innocent, and yet I am not able to speak out. Is it fear? No, it's something more familiar. I recognize this sensation from when I was much younger, when a geezer I didn't know snapped at me. It was a false accusation, but I was pressured by his vehemence and couldn't talk back. It's something more primitive. Intimidation. Love that picture, by the way. It's like playing soccer, and he's like, ah, damn, you destroyed my plane! But Ibaku, you know, all the students are like, oh god, it's so scary! And Raichu's like, But then Ibaku goes, objection! Indicting a suspect is a prosecutor's prerogative, so do as you please. But I'm gonna believe Higashide's statement. I, attorney Ibaku Inugami, shall defend Satayan at the classroom session. Got a problem with that? And you know, Raichi, you know, kind of smiles. He's like, oh, no, that's fine. That's fair. But he's thinking to himself, he didn't bat an eye at my Zeus impact.
I love that they're like, you know what this courtroom drama series needs? It needs special manga battle shonen powers.
Fuck yes, it does. It's amazing. Oh, guys, Raichi's such a douche, too, because he's like, oh, aren't you impressive for a child without any body hair yet?
And he's like, I know, I watched you change. Nothing.
He's like, oh. So he's like, all right, well, I just recalled your nickname, Raichi Papa, or rather, ain't it Thundering Old Man of the Courtroom? Crackle. Oh, God. So, yeah, Raichi says, I hate progress. In bygone days, kids would be smacked for talking back.
You know what's
amazing? Get five across the eyes, kid!
You know what's amusing? I went to a Catholic school, and one of my teachers, my freshman year, told us, he's like, hitting children is no longer allowed in public schools. But our school, we control ourselves, so we could hit you if we wanted to. You should be thankful we choose not to take that right. And I was like, I feel like that's still illegal.
Like the kids who manage to have their growth spurts really early on, or really like 6'5", are like, yeah.
I had one of the best football schools in the state. Why aren't you like, yeah, I'm this 70 to like fucking, you know, 300-pound overweight professor. I'm gonna show you what's what. Like, come on now, buddy. But I just love the notion of, like, you know, y'all should be thankful we don't beat you. Like, maybe if we were in fourth grade, that'd be, like, even a threat. Like, kind of a douchey threat to begin with.
Around
still
15 years old, yeah, it stops being, like, yeah. Yeah. So, then Raichi, you know, is like, you know, after he makes that remark, he says, oh, and also, if I defeat you in front of Pine, she'll be able to leave this school without qualms. So, we'll meet next Wednesday. And if I was like, what do you mean, leave? And so Raichi's like, wait, she didn't tell you yet? And Ibaku flashes back to him, Pine vowed to not leave until she managed to defeat him. And but you know, Raichi says, yes, I'm going to transfer out at the end of the week. And everyone's like, well, Pine looks sad. So the next day, investigation occurs. Ibaku questions Satoyan as well as Higashide, and Satoyan says, "I was just practicing swimming. I swears, I ain't lying." And Higashide says, "I'll testify to that." Tento's all scared, and he says, "Matsuoka and the others didn't find any fish that morning. So if it wasn't her, who did it? And when?" And Ibaku says, "Yes, if it were a curse, they spontaneously appeared out of thin air. Or maybe they were in the pool the whole time, but they weren't visible."
And question mark exclamation point?
Tento.
Tento just want to add to conversation.
Tento's friend, whose name I never remember, is like, "By the way, where is Matsuoka?" And Higashide says, "He's going to testify as a prosecution witness because he was so overwhelmed by Raichipapa's ferocity or something." He was very sad about it, too. And at that moment, Satoyan says, "Sorries!" Fuck your grammar, kid. God. I hate you. By the way, Matsuoka's friend then mentions, not Matsuoka's friend, but Tento's friend mentions, I guess the rumors are true that Matsuoka and Satoyan are dating, which means they are in cahoots! I knew it!
I will be honest, Nick. It is very, very likely Matsuoka is the culprit behind this.
It's definitely possible.
It's not really just possible. It's really... I can't imagine anything, any other situation in it. I mean, I can explain why if you want now.
He is so scared to confess that he is just like... it's so that he could protect his
girl. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing we've seen, especially in the more recent court cases, that usually... it's come from a place of affection, and I imagine that's what this is. Because they already showed, hey, you know, it's not unreasonable for children to want to, you know, protect themselves through lying or getting out of situations, but what they're going to do in this way is show that she was trying to improve herself, but he was afraid that she'd get in trouble, you know, she'd get more bad grades, so he tried to protect her from it.
So it also makes sense because it shows in the courtroom that he's so intimidated by Raichi that, of course, he's just not confessing the truth.
Yeah. And he's also part of the team that was involved in the cleanup, too, or checking the pool. So he
Track. So he could have hidden it, yeah. Good logic, Chris. I like that, yeah. So Ibaku just kind of is like, wow.
Very good.
Yeah. So Tento is like, yeah, we can't afford to lose this, you know, and for Pine Chan's sake, because Pine Chan's wanted to stay here until she won against you and Yagami. And Nico is like, I know. If you also defeat Raichipapa, he might call it the transfer. What kind of crazy theory is that? He actually says that. What are you talking about? No, he's still going to transfer her, Tento.
Tento liked to dream. He can't dream at night. Papa said dreamer for smart people. Tento just see black screen all night.
Ibaku says, all right, if you have so much time in your hands, go hunt down some clues. Besides, ain't it Greedy's call where she goes? And then, later that night, Ibaku talks to Pine after she approaches him. He's like, oh, you're out late. He's like, oh, hey, Greedy. And they're just kind of like awkwardly silent for a bit.
I mean, I don't know if this is just me. I'm not a parent. I don't know. Seems like a little bit of a short dress for a 12-year-old to be wearing, Nick. I don't know. Maybe
she has a butler named Loli Matsu.
I know, but like as I saw it, I was just like,
Is this the first time, really, that you've been?
Yeah, like this is the one moment I'm like, Nick, I feel this may not be appropriate attire for a child to be wearing.
Like the school swimsuit being the only one piece in the entire class made you forget for once that she's like the most concerning dress of any character in this series.
Like the previous chapter, I was just like, cow print bikini, whatever. I'm like, Nick, hold on a moment.
I think she's showing a little bit too much thought.
I don't think
that passes the 3-finger rule.
I think that dress may cut off more than 2 inches above the knee. I'm going to get a ruler here to check. And then Reggie's like, no, let me get it.
But they have a nice little conversation, Pine and Ibaku do, where Pine's just like, can't believe I said something like, I would stay here until I defeat you. It's not like I didn't know that it's our duty to get transferred from school to school almost on a weekly basis. And also what my dad said is true, too. So it's time I switched to schools, and you know, even though I am kind of upset I didn't get to defeat you. But Ibaku says, are you stupid? Whether you win against me or not, and whatever your old man says or doesn't say, Greedy, ain't it still your call in the end? First Tento, now you. Why the heck do I have to have such things said to me? And
be great if she was just like, actually, I'm still a minor, so I don't actually get to have a call on whether or not my parents transfer me.
But, you know, it's... Basically, he is, you know, saying, like, you know, think about this for yourself, basically.
Yeah.
You don't hold yourself to particular rules. What do you really want? And so she thinks about that for once. And meanwhile, Mabaku has sent Sarutobi to go find evidence in the pool. And Sarutobi has dived down, seemingly into the deep end, I think. And so he's like, ah, let me see here. Ah, I found it! And he feels like, he picks up this box, basically. Mm. Cut to the courtroom, and judge calls the session to order. We get their win records. Abaku's got 60 wins, 24 losses. Raichi has 764 wins. And not zero losses, but...
Just I guess they just don't show losses. Yeah.
The baby judge is like, oh, I've never seen this rule, you know, invoked before. He's getting all excited and stuff, and Raichi's like, oh, pleased to meet you. What the fuck is this preschooler doing here?
Why are there monster babies here?
Higashiya kind of looks over at Sarutobi. He's like, what, you're not participating? Sarutobi's like, actually, I'm only allowed to engage in 2 classroom sessions a month because I have my ninja training. Which, I mean, I assume that he could have just said, like, oh, you can only have 1 lawyer at a time. What are you talking about?
Nah, Mick. I mean, Dual Destinies and Phoenix Wright showed 3 attorneys on the same bench, so clearly they have to have at least 3. I take all of my logic of the, my understanding of the fucking Japanese legal system from Ace Attorney, so...
I do like the precedent, though. Saying, like, yeah, I'm gonna be kind of a special case type of thing whenever I step into stuff.
Yeah.
But also, Sarutobi says, by the way, there's no way Abaku moves to a mere adult. And Abaku's first witness is Inako, the creepy, you know, urban legend-obsessed girl. And so she, you know, relates the story of the evil spirit 5 years deep, recaps all the information from the last chapter, and, you know, says that, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes, kids will dive down to the fence bottom and peer between the bars, and then they'll see the face of a child about the same age staring up from the bottom of the deep end! And Abaku's like, yeah, that's all. And the entire courtroom's like, ah! Right? She's like, what? Is he really going to try and pin this on a ghost? Well, this is what you get with children. And the judge is like, oh, so scary! Next witness! And right? She's like, ah, I'll show you how an adult does it! And he's called Matsuoka to the stand. And so he recaps information. He's like, ah, the morning after you discovered the intimidation letter, you FISED committee members did a rigorous inspection of the pool. Well, how was it conducted? Like, well, we, you know, scooped the water with a fish nest to check for objects, and areas that the nest couldn't reach, we put on swimwear and dove in to check directly. And Abaku says, ah, but what about the 5 meters deep area? And Matsuko says, well, of course, we didn't go into that, but we assessed it from every angle, and the water is very clear, so we could see to the bottom, no problem. There was nothing suspicious on the other side of the fence. So Raichi says, so even if the goldfish had been placed there in advance, given the time gap, I doubt there is any way that you could have caused them to appear exactly during 5th period. So the morning classes took place without incident, leaning in uncomfortably close to Matsuoka when he says this. And then suddenly they were there in the 5th period! Goldfish everywhere! The only trespasser during lunch break was the accused, so what do you think of that? And Abaku objects. He's like, you're leading the witness! And the judge says, yeah, I concur with that. So, you know, prosecutor, you know your boundaries. And Wright says, oh, I'm so sorry, but thinks to himself, ah, but I don't need to use words. My eyes are sufficient against a mere tyke. And Pine thinks to herself, it's no use. That's not even close enough to stop Father, as he uses his Zeus impact!
Zap!
He says, this is a courtroom, an open space, so you can say what you think however you want. And Matsuoka panics, and then he goes, Sato-yan did it, I guess? Maybe? That's the earliest one. Wait, no, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that! And he freaks out, and basically, Pine recaps his Zeus impact ability, which is, he just glares at someone and gets them to confess stuff, because he's so scary! So scary! Then Abaku steps up, and he's like, okay, it's alright, Matsuoka, it's not a crime to testify the truth. And so Raichi says, yes, the only one being accused of a crime is the perp, Sato-yan. Actually, says Ibaku, Satayan isn't the perp, though the evil spirit 5 meters deep is among us.
Nick! What a turnabout!
Reggie says, I think you've read too many mystery manga, Attorney Lad. Which actually sounds like a great title. Attorney Lad.
Attorney Lad, the adventures of Ibaku.
Although I guess Legal Lad might make more sense. Whatever. So Ibaku says...
No, we need to save that for his rival, Legal Eagle. Who is an actual physical eagle. who prosecutes people.
Would you like to cross-examine the witness, Legal Eagle?
He's clawing out people's eyes. He's guilty. His eyes are gone.
Ibaku says, there are some truths you just can't see by simply looking down from above, mister. I'm gonna romp the hell out of you. Reggie says, you insignificant rugrat. Go ahead and try it. I've noticed that we keep on spending a whole ton of time on Gakuhote, but fuck
it. But I like it. It's fuck it. It's like one of the funnest series to recap each week. And I get to play the music. Everyone has fun during it. We actually have had people say that it's one of the funnest parts of the segment of the show, so...
Also, I have to say, I'm really digging this case.
Yeah, this case is shaping up really well. I mean, we're joking a lot about how creepy, Raichi Papa is, but it is actually an effective battle here. And the one thing to kind of keep in mind with how derogatory he's being towards kids, that this is a manga that's supposed to be aimed at kids. So, you know, the target audience is supposed to be 11-year-olds and kids of that age who... At that point, yeah, you generally do feel like adults don't understand you and look down on you in those ways. So the idea of a kid getting to one-up an adult is a pretty cool thing for them, and building it up as this notion that he just, you know, shits on kids all the time is helping to build up to that point. So I've sincerely enjoyed this series. I highly recommend, guys, if you are enjoying Gakuhotai, to please, go in and vote for it in the rankings, because it's having a rough time in Japan. We need to kind of see if we can get it some traction here in America and help it out.
So, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is...
I have to turn off the Phoenix Wright music because it wouldn't fit My Hero Academia at all.
Right. My Hero Academia, where lots and lots of fights took place in the tournament. I don't think that we should actually go through all of them, because they go by pretty damn quickly. Some of them, they get like a single panel to explain what happened. We get introduced to some other characters there in the tournament, like Shiozaki, who has like vines for hair, and she can control them at will, grow them back together. And there's like a fun little comment where it says, you know, if she, you know, detaches her hair, more will grow in their place with a little bit of water and sunlight. In other words, she'll never go bald! Well, she's a girl, and girls don't tend to go bald very often anyway. Anyway, but she won by defeating, what's his name? Kaminari, right. Lightning guy who kind of blows his load whenever he zaps some stuff, right. While this is going on, Midoriya is scribbling notes about the people who are advancing through the tournament while he's sitting next to Uraraka. And so Uraraka's like, oh, wow, you're really thinking ahead, aren't you? He's like, yeah, well, it's a hobby of mine. And, you know, we finally have a chance to see the quirks of the people outside of our own class. So, you know, I've got to be prepared and stuff. Oh, by the way, I've also got stuff you need to know about Class A, even, you know, your zero gravity, Uraraka. And she's like, oh, wow, you're so amazing, basically. But, you know, the sports festival has really brought you to a whole other level. And Dick is like, huh? It's like, it's just like word bubble question mark. So, then we get Ida versus Mei Hatsume of the support course, who is wearing all sorts of helmets and stuff. And in a weird twist, Ida is also wearing support items, and he says, I was so touched by my opponent's sense of sportsmanship. Although she is a member of the support corps, she came to me and said, if we're to be seen as equals, then we should fight on equal footing. And she gave me these items to use. Her earnest spirit. I could never look down on it. That was my thinking. And the answer's like, oh, God, he's so naive.
You're an idiot.
So the whole match basically comes down to Hatsume has basically is using this as a chance to show off her abilities to prepare and use support items. And she's like, oh, check out how awesome, you know, your legs are, Ida. And while she's, like, communicating to the audience with a microphone headset, and she's causing to really zoom around, but she's dodging around as well. and we're introduced to her quirk, which is just she has telescopic vision. It's called zoom, and she can see up to 5 kilometers away. So she's just observing people's reactions in the crowd as she does this while exemplifying her stuff. And she's like, by the way, you can use my arms and stuff. This was a sponsorship, essentially. Or not sponsorship. This was advertisement. And she willingly steps out of the ring after she's finished showing her stuff off. And Ida just goes, you deceived me!
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't like you. Well, I like his line, too. I really dislike you. Such God. A dweeb.
Uraraka heads to the prep room to get ready for her match. Ida steps back into the prep room as well. And when he sees Uraraka, he's like, oh my God, what is with your ridiculously furrowed eyebrows? And she looks so weird because hers is not a face suited to that expression, basically.
She doesn't normally focus in this hard.
So she's like, I'm just so nervous because, and I guess it shows on my face. And he's like, ah, right. Your opponent is Bakugo. And she says, yeah, I'm kind of scared, but, seeing you out there. But before she can go on, Uraraka comes in and she's like, oh, before that, they say, well, shouldn't you be watching the other matches? Actually, they ended really fast because Ashido managed to damage Aoyama's belt. And then she knocked him out with an uppercut. Tokoyami won his match by defeating Yaoyorozu before she could use the object she created. And Uraraka's like, oh, then I guess I'll be up soon. And basically they discuss what's going to happen. And Deku says, you need a counter strategy for Kachan. So I came up with one on the fly and it might work. And so he's like, oh, all right, Uraraka. But she says, thanks, but that's okay. You're amazing, Deku. You do amazing things all the time. During the cavalry battle, I thought the easiest strategy would be to team up with friends, but when I think about it, I was actually just putting my faith in you. That's why Ida said, I challenge you and all that. That left me feeling a little embarrassed about myself. So, thanks but no thanks. Everyone here is fighting for their futures. Doesn't that make us all rivals? So, I'll see you in the finals. And a big full-page spread of her shooting a thumbs up behind her as she starts to walk out. So, I like this,
Fucking badass moment for that, Especially as it's juxtaposed with this, intense, absolute, drag-out brawl going
Tetsu, on. Tetsu and Kirishima just punching the shit out of each other, basically.
Yeah, and that's what they're trying to show. Like, all of these characters are going in this. They all have their own, focus. They're all, fueled with this fiery passion. And, Urahara's, not Urahara. So what's her name?
Uraraka.
Uraraka, sorry. Uraraka's like, I want to win on my merits. You're doing all these incredible things, so I need to do it myself, and I'm gonna prove to myself that I can, I'm worthy of meeting you in the finals on my own, on my own merits.
Yeah, this is kind of her Tadakura Megumi moment, where it's like we've got to have the female character who is supposed to technically be friends with, but also competing with the main character, actually stand up on her own feet and show her stuff. And so here we go.
And I like how even within that, you can still see. It seems like there's still some nervousness in her. Like, you can see kind of what looks like vibrations around her hand. Like, she's not fully confident, but she's putting it all in. Like, it's nice to see. Like, this is a character you want to root for, especially in a match against the Bakugan or whatever his name is.
Bakugo.
Bakugo. I call him Bakugan every time, though. Bakugo, who, you kind of like, but just like, he's such an asshole, though.
He's the... If this were Yu-Gi-Oh, then he would be Kaiba. Sort of.
A douchier Kaiba, if there was one.
And a less effective Kaiba.
Yes.
Let's be straight, too, because, anyway.
But this is a very exciting matchup coming up here.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The match between Tetsu and Kirishima basically ends with them knocking each other out, causing a tie. And I love, though, the announcer's like, well, in the event of a tie, we'll find our winner after they recover with a quick arm wrestling match. Or something.
Yeah, they're just like, we didn't expect a draw, so I don't know, we'll fucking pick a number between 1 and 10, whoever's closest, I'll give you over, something like that.
So everyone's like, oh man, that was great, we have such awesome hot bloodedness. But then Bakugo and Uraraka come out and start to face each other. Some of the girls brought there are like, I'm kind of worried about this match coming up, and Deku is watching with Ida, and Deku's thinking to himself, do your best, Uraraka. The announcer says, for the last matchup of the first round, a celebrity since his middle school days, with a face only a mother could love. It's Katsuki Bakugo of the Hero Course versus my personal pick, Ochako Raraka, also of the Hero Course, and the Beast Incarnate, the man who... No, WrestleMania is this Sunday, shut up.
Nick, I've made a conscious decision to... I couldn't have slurred that more if I tried to. I've made a conscious decision. I still fucking screwed it up. I'm not following wrestling news, Nick. I don't even know what the card for WrestleMania is.
That's okay. It's not a good card.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good then.
Well, it's not the card. It's that the build's been shit, so...
I did hear that the Go Home Raw ended with them playing tug of war over the belt.
Let's not talk about that.
Okay.
That show is either going to meet my very low expectations or maybe be good. It can't fall below them. Anyway. My Hero Academy was good.
Very good.
I look forward to this match. It's going to be interesting.
I'm almost torn. I don't know what manga to look most forward to next week. We have One Piece and World Trigger are back. It's tough though. My Hero Academia is really shooting up there. I love the way it writes its characters.
By the way, if you listen to the podcast and you don't read Shonen Jump, you should. Like, I know that Naruto is gone now, but honestly, it's
gonna be back. They're doing a mini series.
It's a freaking great lineup that they've got right now. It's awesome.
If you take the rankings each week, if you do the rankings, you rank your top four series. And for a while, you know, barring, you know, very one-off chapters, I usually had, like, only one or two series I'd fit in there, and the rest of it, I guess Nisekoi was okay this week. Now, as it is, I actually have more series that I like than I can actually vote for between World Trigger, One Piece, Gakuhotai, Shokugeki no Soma, and My Hero Academia. So,
yeah.
We're in a really good point. Toriko started to pick things up back, so...
And Bleach, well, never mind.
Bleach might get silly awesome once Aizen comes around again, so I'm fingers crossed on that. But yeah.
Manga is great for as much as we bitch about a whole bunch of stuff on the show. We fucking love reading this stuff. So, One Piece! Chapter 780, The Hark, by the way, skipping Nisekoi this week because psych! Nothing's actually changing. It's like, okay, fuck you too.
Actually, never mind, it would come up later. So yeah, One Piece.
You said it again. It's One Piece. World Peace is not a real series, Chris.
If I say it enough times, someone will draw it. Like, Oda and Ashihara will team together, and they'll be like, let's just do it, because one kid in Pennsylvania wants it.
You're just going to say that every week now, aren't you?
I'm just like, so, on to World Peace this, Nick?
One Piece. This week? Chapter 780, The Heart Curse. So, this... is a flashback at the start to several minutes ago, because, of course, last time it was, you know, Doflamingo saying, Law is dead. How are you going to react with it when you see his corpse? And this is before they apparently turned Law into a corpse. Treble and Doflamingo just standing over Law. He's still missing an arm, bleeding everywhere, lying, barely managing to hold onto his sword. He can't even get up on his feet. And so Doflamingo says, come on, Law, you couldn't possibly match up to me alone, so why do you challenge the both of us? Straw Hat won't find it easy to reach us. If he had the mettle to kill a so-called friend, he might have been able to save you. Alas, you poor sap. Born in the hell of the White Town, with a future of pure darkness hanging over your head. Then you met Corazon and managed to draw out your life a bit longer. But now you're nothing more than his vengeful ghost, living on sheer hatred for me and the promise of revenge. What a meaningless 13 years you've spent.
Nick, do you want me to do my Joker for Doflamingo?
Oh, go ahead, yeah. Right, I forgot you started doing a Heath Ledger for him, basically. Yeah.
Alright, where are we at?
Next page, I think.
Oh, yeah. You have my sympathy. Within moments, you'll be dead beyond all doubt. A miserable dog's death, devoid of any hope or salvation. So if you're going to die, why not make use of your final moments? Use the op-op for its ultimate power on me. Perform the immortality operation on me before you die. And in exchange, I will grant whatever you desire.
And Law says, anything? Well, I would like 200,000 ho-hos.
I would like you to not kill me. You can't do that.
No.
That's not part of the rules now.
Let me let me name my conditions, you know, like the genie in Aladdin had the three conditions. So he says, well, if it benefits the both of us, all right, I'm in. And Dribble's like, ah, awesome! And now Duffy gets eternal life! And Bala says, I want you to bring Korra back to life right now, and then go and lick the butt of every last person in this country.
That is the greatest line. I love that. I want you to bring Korra back to life, then lick everyone's butt.
Can you imagine how much better the Princess Bride would be if Inigo Montoya was just like, you know, give me anything I ask for, anything you want. I want my father back. And for you to lick everyone's butt.
I think it would be great is if, like, fucking Doflamingo's like, so I just have to lick everyone's butt?
No, and bring Korra back, too. And oh, no, he's over here, you see?
Yeah, oh, hello, it's me, Korra. I pretend to be mute, but I'm back now.
Yeah, I'm back. All right, just stay there while Doflamingo, I mean, my brother, goes licks everyone's butt, and then you promised you gotta give him immortality.
Go ahead and give me, I mean, my brother, immortality.
It's like he comes back, like, wiping his mouth, like, all right, I've licked the butts of everyone in town. Where's my immortality? He's like, really...
You have to bring Korra back to life. Oh, come on!
I licked everyone's butt!
Oh, God. You haven't licked your own, though. Oh, it's so hard to do that, though! Not flexible enough.
Why are you trying to go over, like, bend over your back? Why wouldn't you go from the other angles? It's, like, the worst.
Because I have more practice this way. I mean... Oh, God. And then Law, surprisingly, fucking flips off Doflamingo.
In another badass scene.
And he just says, you're the one who doesn't see what's going on, Doflamingo. The Straw Hat crew has performed countless miracles on their way here. You can't stop them, and you can't get Caesar back. Your future is already determined. And then Doflamingo just fucking shoots him in the chest, and then starts to lecture him.
That symbol on your back, Corazon. What are you trying to say with that? And you named your crew the Heart Pirates? What are you insinuating? You won't ever sit on the Heart Throne. So why do you wear the heart, Law? Enough of your meddling, Law. Corazon, your curse ends here.
And then we cut back to the president after Doflamingo just, you know, fucking shoots Law until his gun runs out of bullets, basically. I think that that is basically what's implied by the click-click on his pistol there. So
that is pretty pimp.
Meanwhile, what guy who's been named a few...
Tank.
Mohawk Captain of Guard guy. Tank?
It's Tank, I believe.
Yeah, right. So he says to Riku, he's like, oh, your majesty, I will join you as we descend into town, and we'll limit the casualties and so on and so forth, because, you know, of course, Pika is no longer there, so it's just like, yeah, okay, you know, regular people can start to maintain law and order now that all the powerful guys are dropping, as we're getting close to the conclusion of this whole battle. And Viola says, it's true that the worst of the family are down to just two now. That's Treble and Doflamingo. But we've lost a lot of strength, too. And Luffy, after having defeated Bellamy, comes rushing in and storms onto the scene where Doflamingo and Treble are. He comes out shouting Doflamingo's name. And Doflamingo says...
Hold on, I lost the page. Took you long enough, Straw Hat! Is that the one?
Yeah, I meant the next one.
Oh, okay. So Bellamy is finally free, now that I've released him?
Luffy says, don't play dumb! You know what happened! You knew he wouldn't run!
And
he
Spiderweb!
He tries to use his elephant pistol with armament hockey, but yeah, Doflamingo just summons this spiderweb with his strings and blocks it very easily. And although it seems that part of it actually does break, I think that's what happens. And he acts shocked. I'm not sure exactly what it's meant to be carried across there.
I think he pulls
it. He grabs onto it so he can swing around it. Okay.
Yeah.
So Luffy swings around and he tries to unleash his Gatling as well, but Doflamingo somehow dodges it. It looks like a whole bunch of rubble gets in the way.
He uses, I guess, super speed, or either he carries himself using his strings out of the direction of it.
And then he summons a whole bunch of strings and uses a technique called Breakwide, which is basically like Desert Coffin from Naruto. Just, like, grabs Luffy in it to try and crush him. Lucha manages to get away. Then, gruesome bit, Luffy realizes he stepped in somebody's blood. Oh, hey, it's Law's. And Luffy's like, oh my god, what's all this blood from? What happened to your arm hanging there? But Doflamingo just says,
he's dead. Can't you tell just by looking at him? He seemed to really trust you.
So Luffy looks over his corpse for a bit, and Doflamingo taunts him for a while.
I hear you're quite... What's it?
I hear you do this now, too.
I hear you're quite the miracle worker, Straw Hat. You didn't seem all that strong based on our fight, and now you've got two of us to fight.
Go ahead.
Let's wrap up this little game.
And Luffy says, how dare you! And starts to get really angry, but then he hears a voice that goes,
listen closely, Straw Hat! That's okay, Law.
You don't know who it is, so it's let's
Law.
Not jump in.
It's Law.
You don't, let's not jump to any conclusions.
Well, no, they know it on the Shonen Jump podcast that it's in the Japanese. It's,
spoilers!
I'm sorry, Nick, it's clearly Law. Who else would it be? Like, it's me, Frankie. Listen closely, Straw Hat.
It's me, Mr. Two. I'm back.
It'll be great. It's even worse. Like, it's me, Mr. One. I don't really have a lot to say to you.
Don't think we've ever interacted before.
Don't really drink skim milk. It's not that good for you. If you need to, do water. All right, bye.
Since when did Law have an Edwin voice?
I just wanted it to be really, like after all the scenes. Like, all the seriousness. Like, how dare you? Like, listen closely, Straw Hat. Like, he's fucking, oh, yeah, Snagglepuss. I must remember what you told me.
That's not Snagglepuss,
though. I know it's not, but it's still just a silly.
Snagglepuss is like this, even.
Oh, Straw Hat. Heavens to Murgatroyd, exit stage left.
Heavens to Murgatroyd. Heavens to Betsy. It's lame. Stupid, even.
But yes, it is a flashback of some kind. This isn't actually Law speaking. Or whoever it is. Maybe it's not Law. It's Law. But whoever it is, they're not actually speaking right now.
Toriko. Gourmet 317. Your hand!
My hand?
Your hand!
Seems okay.
So, coming off the end of the last chapter, Bambina and Kaka fight! Bambina lashes out with his tail. It looks like it bends Kaka in half, but she manages to somehow latch onto the tail, causing Bambina to just fucking breath weapon her.
It is, like, an awesome shot of just him, like, fire my babe!
And seemingly singes his own tail as well, but he seems to be very happy with the result as she gets blasted into the distance, it looks like. Toriko reacts, you know, it's like, oh man, you know, Bambina never showed us his true power as one of the Eight Kings. And at the same time as the Monkey King's noisy explosion, there was a second sound, the snap of a thread of life severing. And everyone's like, oh, remember when Komatsu wore a chef's hat and was happy? No, Komatsu! We're crying because of the Sonorikos, but also because we love you. No, Komatsu! And then they realize, wait a minute, Union! He's got Komatsu inside him! Let us inside, too! Because this wasn't already homoerotic enough. And, you know, but yeah, Yun sucks them all into his body, which is, I'm glad we don't see him without that cutaway effect, because I'm sure it would look terrifying. Swollen up backs. Ugh. But everyone's like, we have to help Komatsu, but what we do? It already looks like he's dead. Quick, let's feed him pear. Come on, Komatsu, taste this. And some of
put pear. These balls in your mouth.
A little drip falls from pear into his mouth. They're like, alright, it's in his mouth. Let's take off the bandages and strip him down naked. Let's look at his heart. It has the
let's start blowing him. What was that, Coco? Nothing.
Like, oh no, it's still an empty cavity. Nothing's changed. No, Komatsu! And Coco's like, oh, the electromagnetic waves. No! And Coco's like, no, Komatsu! No! Were you saying goodbye? Yes. That was what he did last time. He did say goodbye.
Hold that sure. And give me your big, strong hand.
Yeah, but yeah, he remembers, like, Toriko, give me your hands. Right! And he grabs onto Komatsu's hand. He's like, come back, Komatsu! Come back, little man!
That'd be great. Komatsu. He's like, no, stupid. Reach in the hole with your hand. I'm not on a date, dickhead.
Komatsu, like, the drop a pear of slides in his throat, he manages to swallow it. And it's like, oh my god, his body has swallowed the pear soup! It's the hole is filling up with pear! Yay! But they're like, oh, what do we do now? And they're like, oh my god, we're being sucked back into the back zone or whatever the fuck it was. Wait a minute! I remember seeing that heart earlier! So that heart that they showed, I guess, during the fight with Bambina was actually Komatsu's heart.
Yeah, maybe. It just made its way there. It's been hanging about.
Yeah, I'm still here, guys. It's cool.
It's been backtracked. It's doing one of those, you know, Secret Life of Walter Mitty kind of movies. It's trying to discover itself, break away from the world it's known, and try to find itself in the wild.
Okay. So Toriko's like, oh my god, this heart belongs to Komatsu! And all of the four kings try and reach out for it. And they're like, oh no, we can't get it. But Toriko's like, wait a minute, Komatsu wanted my hand inside of his hole.
It'd be great, just come out. It's like, not that hole. Oh, right, this one.
Right, the one in your chest. Okay.
Makes more sense. He reaches
through the repairing hole in Komatsu's body and fucking grabs his heart out of the void and just pulls it back into place and leaves it there.
And he's just like, Dr. Toriko is done.
It all starts to repair, and Komatsu's body lurches up, and they're like, damn it, Toriko! You put the fucking arteries where the veins were.
You put the heart in upside down.
She's just like, I'm
in so much worse pain.
Kill me. But no, Komatsu by lurches up, blood starts to flow through his body again, and his stomach starts to gurgle as he sits up, and he's just like, I'm starving. It's the lamest fucking panel. It's like hand behind head in embarrassment. It's like, I'm hungry. Oops.
I'm a silly kid.
And then everyone's just like, Komatsu, your name!
I'm upset that Zebra's crying. I know it's because of the pollen, but I'm still upset Zebra's crying this moment.
Stop being badass, Zebra.
I feel like he should be off to the side like, stupid, weak jerk shouldn't be alive anyway, except that I care about him, and everyone's just like, oh, Zebra, you care about him. He's like, no, not a tsundere. He's a stupid baka, and he runs off.
Zebra hides his, like, single manly tear.
Or he's, like, punching a fucking monkey to death off screen for no reason. He's just like, I had so much anger left.
And because we have no world trigger, that is actually it.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, one thing I did want to mention, though. I've dropped it from the recap of Seven Deadly Sins, but a lot of people brought it up to me this week. Apparently this week, Melodious got split into five people who all molested the princess. And then the big reveal is like, oh, you know, Melodious has a power level of 3,000-something. And at the very end, it was, oh, shit, the boss we're going up against has a power level of 26,000! Like, oh, okay, that's... Is that what we're doing? We're really gonna marry ourselves to this power level thing, aren't we? So, yeah,
because you know, Dragon Ball didn't get tired of that.
I'm just gonna note, I'm very, very glad that I've stopped reading it right now. It sounds like it was it's been hitting nothing but a downturn.
Okay. But yeah, that's it. Weekly manga recap done. So, thank you everyone who joined us for the show. Which we record on twitch.tv/RollOTWednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, usually. Sometimes we do need to change it up, so follow us on Twitter. He's at RollOT and I'm at YRollerOfTime, and we'll tweet when the episode is about to begin recording. Also, check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com and send us criticism, questions, and suggestions in the comments section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address. Of course, be sure to give us a rating such on iTunes.
Yes, like I want to thank to Battlelight, gave us a great review on iTunes. It's greatly appreciated, guys. Every time you do it, it sincerely does help us. I can't stress that enough.
Help us beat those woodworking assholes.
Ironically, Calumny47, when he gave us a podcast review, gave us a podcast as though we were a woodworking podcast. Simply the best woodworking podcast around. Their natural back and forth keep me having fun as I learn to build my own furniture. From one outdoorsman to another, the weekly manga recap gets two bears paws up for me.
Brilliant.
So good stuff there. Also, before I go into the manga recommendations, it's just been encouraged that we maybe pimp some of the stuff that we do outside of weekly manga recap. So if people aren't aware that these things are going on and they'd be interested in checking them out, they could. So, Nick, you do a regular wrestling podcast and
it takes me forever to actually edit the episodes and post them and such. We do have a pretty big back catalog at podcastgarden.com/IWChronicles, and also we record new episodes dozens in advance, in fact, every other Friday on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/whyruleroftime. I do that with MechaGM and SonicEv, and I also game with MechaGM Saturdays on his Twitch channel.
Mm-hmm.
And you?
Yeah, on Saturdays, I do a weekly gaming stream, Saturday night at about 7. Right now, I'm currently doing Tomb Raider, but I'm also doing Pokemon LPs, Nuzlocke Challenges, various other stuff coming on. So if you're interested in checking out, it's a weekly Let's Play. I have that on there, and I also have catalogs of my old ones that I've done, highlights of them. On my highlights on there. And then Sundays, I'm currently doing Secret World Sunday around 2 p.m. Yes. Eastern over at twitch.tv/royalty. We play through the Secret World. We have a lot of good fun. We goof around. I do it with the Infamous Planet, who does our visual editions of MechaGM, the man you mentioned before. And,
special thanks go out to him, as well as Felix Stark 2,
yes.
who has said that he will be taking up Infamous Planet's mantle while Infamous Planet goes on a little bit of a hiatus. So there will continue to be visual editions of the show as Spine takes a break.
Yes.
So.
And also with Mr. Futaga, we do that every Sunday. We have a lot of fun. We goof around. We play a game. It's really fun. And if you want to check it out, I highly recommend it. So just wanted to throw those out there. Oh, and the Super Larious podcast show. I do a podcast with my brother. It's a comedy show. If you want to check it out, you can see episodes superlariousbrothers.podbean.com. Yeah, Podbean. Yes, that's correct.
Podbean.
Anyways. That's it. So, guys, that's what we're doing.
Before I forget, before you go into that, sorry. Also, special thanks to T-Man. Narok Fanboy, Adra Boobs, patreon.com/T-Man.
Yeah, and I think he also has, what's the streaming
service? I'm not doing a fourth one!
No, I just want to mention it once. He didn't ask me for it. I just want to mention it because I saw when he's pinned, there's a streaming service for artists, and I can't think it's...
Oh, yeah.
Pick Turn or something. Fuck, I can't remember what the fuck it's called. He has one on there, though. You can find it on there. I believe he's under Steve Man. If not, just follow him on Twitter, and he'll post when it happens. But if you're curious about seeing his art, you can check it out there. All right, so without any further ado, let me go into our manga recommendation for this week. This one is actually from someone who's sending in their recommendation for a first time here. I don't know how to pronounce your name, sir. I don't know at all. This is something definitely... Most likely German.
Can you paste it in the Skype and let me see if I can pronounce it?
Gottfried Schold, and I don't know how you pronounce E.
Never mind, that was way better.
I don't know how you pronounce E L D H as a word. What? Regardless, I apologize. I am not for butchering your name, but you have a very good suggestion there. I'm going to check out. It is a series called Appleseed. It is a sci-fi series, a shonen series. Godfred's, has a bucket every name, but his recommendation of he says is one of the best main female protagonists ever, in his opinion. Sci-fi political drama, and he wants to know our thoughts on it. So we're going to give that a try and probably have it for next week, because it looks like it's a relatively shorter series. It's completed, so looking forward to checking that out.
Okay, that'll be next week, so yeah.
Yeah, that's it. All right, now. At this point, Nick, we didn't do one at the start of it.
Right.
But do we want to have wacky banter at the end of the show now?
We could definitely try that. I do think that there is a void that needs to be filled, like the one that was in Komatsu's heart, Chris.
That was a good segue. I had thought
it's, it's a shame we're not going back into Toriyama.
Yeah, I was like, if there was something that could segue that into, it'd be phenomenal, but I feel like I've just let you down.
Uh-huh.
Like I let down everybody every week, especially myself.
Like Bellamy thought he let down Doflamingo.
God, you're ridiculous at this. I'm completely lacking behind.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you are.
I don't know what to do at all. I feel like you're giving me gold and I'm shitting out well just shit, I guess.
Is that it?
Yeah, bye everybody.